The last couple of years have been really weird if we were looking to sell our businesses. And that's because the capital markets have been weird, right? Hey, I'm Tyler from Seller Accountant and Return on Podcast. I want to welcome you to today's episode. And in today's episode, I want to talk to you about the flip side of that coin, a market where things have been strange. In fact, they've been a little bit depressing if you wanted to sell your business for a strong multiple. That same market creates an incredible opportunity if you're looking to acquire a durable business at a lower multiple than you would have paid during the feeding frenzy of the kind of private equity and venture-backed aggregators that came through our marketplace 2, 3, 4 years ago. So this conversation I'm having today with a friend of mine, Michael Frew, he's acquired multiple businesses that are online businesses, and his process for understanding targets, finding companies he loves, and then helping to scale them and potentially sell them down the line, I found to be very, very, very informative. And so I hope that you enjoy this conversation with Michael Frew. You can find out more about him and his model at michaelfrew.net. That's Michael, FREW.net. Enjoy this episode of ROP. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jeffcoat. All right, in today's episode of ROP, I'm excited to talk about flipping the script on investing in e-commerce, sustainable, durable, online-related businesses. And to do that, I want to talk to my new friend, Michael Frew. Michael, welcome to the show today.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're absolutely, man. It's good to have you here. So I think so much of our content and our discussions over the last 2 or 3 years, Michael, have been rooted in, okay, I've got a brand and I want to try to optimize to sell. And that's an important part of the equation. But I think what I'm seeing in the markets right now, we had $13 billion in venture capital flood into our space between 20 and 21, and then like crickets over the last 2 years as
It
the
just
capital market
completely
got
changed.
hard. Like, maybe let's just start there. Like, how are you seeing the acquisitions market kind of evolve for durable e-commerce businesses? And I don't know, where do you see it going next?
You're absolutely right. So I acquired my last business. It was in the end of 2022. The financing that I put together and the way we did that, you can't even do it today. And we're talking at the beginning, it's January 2024. And we've been through a bit of a roller coaster ever since, right? We had the rates increase, and now we're starting to move where we're looking at a little bit of a softer rate market in the future. Multiples have come down. There was definitely a bit of a buyer strike. There was a bit of a seller strike, and it's all slowly coming back together. So I'd love to be able to tell you the exact date when everything will finally get back in line. But you're right, it's been pretty dynamic in the last year, which is exciting on both sides. So you mentioned this in the thought of, when you're running your business, there's two customers, right? There's the customers you're selling to every day, and there's somebody who's going to buy your business in the future. So always keeping that in mind, keeping the market kind of in the back of your mind, when's a good time to do something is exactly why we're here talking about it.
And so this is probably a good moment to kind of take a pause and say, okay, so you acquired your last business into 2022. I know you've been in this game, and I was just doing some research. You're a dev turned multi-acquisition entrepreneur. Give us a little bit of your journey and how like just kind of what you're up to these days so people can understand the context of our discussion.
Absolutely. So yes, I started as a developer and engineer, and I worked in that for 18 years. But during that 18-year period, I knew a couple things were true. One, although I enjoyed being a developer, I didn't quite have the passion for a lot of the projects I was working on. And that manifested itself in what I call quarter life crises, where I would just flat out quit my job with no plan of no idea what to do. One time I went back and got an MBA. One time I sat around for 6 months and went right back into engineering. And so I always knew that there, somewhere in there, I wasn't happy not being the boss, not running my own projects. And that's where there was a big transition for me when I found that you could actually acquire businesses instead of trying to start them from scratch. And we all know that starting from scratch, you have statistically, it's 95% of the businesses don't make it, but those are only the ones that register with the government. I'm pretty sure it's closer to 99.9% because most businesses never even make it to that point. So when you look at it from that way, as you become a more middle tier and senior engineer, you want to be pivoting to things that are going to have a better chance of success. And it seems pretty obvious to me that if it's going to be successful, it's probably something that's already running, already has customers, already has cash flow, has marketing, And that's why I thought acquiring businesses is a lot smarter. And so that's a little bit of my message is make sure you think about this before you invest a whole ton of time into starting a business. And I have a feeling a lot of people in your audience have heard of selling their e-com business in the past. So this might be hitting the nail on the head for a lot of people.
I definitely think so. And it's interesting because you're exactly right. Like before we hit record, you kind of made the comment of like, have an entrepreneurial spirit without naturally being like the creative guy that can build like something from scratch. I would say that's been true for me. Like I've now been the founder of two companies that I have actually started from scratch, but in both instances, right. Like it's extremely like unsexy industry that I'm just improving upon and it's kind of worked out.
Yep.
But I think you're right. There's a disproportionate number of kind of investor mindset men and women out there working some kind of corporate 9-to-5, and maybe they're a dev, you know, if they're in your world. And so I would imagine here's a really common situation. You're like, okay, side hustle. Let me try to buy products from Walmart and sell them on Amazon. Let's do like side hustle, try to create some cash. And then the dream becomes, wow, margins on Amazon are garbage right now. If I'm selling somebody else's brand, what would it look like for me to acquire my own model that gives me that durable profitability? Like, I guess that would maybe be an opening question here for somebody that's in that spot. Maybe they've built a couple hundred K a year in revenue doing someone else's brand, and they're picking up what you're putting down. They're like, you know what? I do think that I'm probably better suited to acquire and then maybe acquihire myself into a new entity that already exists rather than like trying to create something from scratch. I mean, is that the kind of journey you're talking about with the clients that you've worked with?
Absolutely. Actually, you've really hit it on the head. So we were talking before the call a little bit about being an entrepreneur, and I struggle to say that word about myself because I really feel like I'm an operator. And so if you think of the business life cycle of something that starts from zero and then ends up maybe at a PE firm, that business life cycle is going to start with one or two entrepreneurs, and they're going to build it up to a point where it's making money, but there's always a shiny new thing. You know, a couple of years ago, it was NFTs. Now all of a sudden it's AI, and most entrepreneurs are going to want to move to that new thing. They also don't particularly like doing operations. That's a little bit where I come in. So you mentioned it as kind of an investor. I'm thinking of it as an operational person. So the entrepreneur takes the business from 0 to 1. I show up and take it from 1 to 10. Then I sell it to the next group that's going to take it 10 to 100. And that's kind of how the business grows. I'm professionalizing it. I'm making it scalable, you know, and then I send it to the next group. So that's kind of how I think about it. And it sounds a little bit like what you're saying here is, if I'm an engineer and I actually like running the projects, or if I don't really see myself as coming up with a new idea and being able to put all that together and go out and get customers, a lot of engineers are introverted. We don't particularly like marketing. You know, it's kind of hard unless we're marketing to other engineers. It's a little bit tricky for us. And so that's where I think this might be a good fit, where you already have something that's got that traction. And yeah, that's, you know, another piece that I'd like to kind of bring out of this conversation is exactly like you said. Maybe you're an operator and you enjoy acquiring something that's already working, moving it forward, and then moving it on to the next person.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I want to talk about, let's talk about both sides of this coin. When you're looking for an opportunity that may allow you to step in, make an investment, and generate that value, what does that look like for you? How do you approach finding an opportunity?
Yeah, so for me, it's funny. My first thing I look at is, would I enjoy running this project? Would I enjoy running this business? I know I have colleagues that immediately put everything into a spreadsheet and it kicks out an answer, yes or no, and this is what I would pay you. There's some business models where I think that actually makes a lot of sense. But for me, I focus a lot on software. And so I think, you know, I want projects that I enjoy working on, that I feel like do something for society that's positive. Sure. I enjoy talking with the customers, which are usually going to be other developers and engineers. You know, and so that's a B2B relationship. Whereas we all know, especially if we're in e-commerce, a B2C relationship can be a bit taxing when you're dealing with customers. So I'm kind of trying to choose a little bit of who I talk to each day. So yeah, for me, I know how much cash I have sitting on the side, which gives me about of a range of what type of or what size of business I can pay for. Then I look at, all right, is this something I would enjoy doing? And that's what's so great about having so many niches, whether you're selling something that you actually really enjoy writing about or a software business that I would like because I really enjoy the customer base and the problem it's solving. Those are the top two things, you know, what money do I have and what would be interesting? And I go forward from there. And so, like I mentioned, last acquisition was at the right at the end of 2022. So basically January 1st, 2023. I pick up one or two years because SaaS can be kind of difficult. I think with other models, especially Amazon or e-commerce, you can adapt and bring more businesses in per year. That's kind of your roll-up model. So yeah, hopefully that answers a little bit of the question, but that's a little bit of what I look for personally. And everybody comes up with their own profile, really.
No, I think that's like, it's well said, and we'll get into the operations kind of professionalizing of the business here in a second, but I think your point is well taken, because if you're just throwing money at an opportunity and you're not naturally going to have the grit to work through the things that naturally make every business difficult if you don't care about the mission or the problem that this product or this SaaS product or this service solves. That completely makes sense. And that's probably going to make you better at negotiating with the founders. It's going to make you a better partner to anybody who stays on board. And frankly, you're going to be willing to do more work to generate value for yourself and the other owners if you handle it that way. In terms of financing, I know you mentioned this, like, hey, I have some cash. I've got some liquidity. I may not have enough liquidity to purchase the entire asset. I know that, and you said this before we hit record, like the capital markets are different now than they were 2 years ago, even probably when you were closing that last deal that you mentioned a little over a year ago. Like, what is your mindset now when it comes to finding the capital to make acquisitions? Like, what's the strategy right now?
Right. First is, it's always going to be some of your own bootstrapped money, right? And worst case, or let's say best case, it's going to be 20% of your own money that has to go into a deal. When I started this 10 years ago, there were not a lot of other financing options. This industry, buying online business, has really matured in the last decade. And we now see companies that are doing loans for these types of businesses. The SBA has actually gotten involved and approved, especially, I think, e-commerce, Amazon, things where you can actually show inventory and assets. The SBA has gotten involved with. Yes, now there's lenders. So you can stack your financial pieces together and make an acquisition. Obviously, seller financing can be a big piece. So you kind of put all those building blocks together to make a deal work. And it's becoming more and more just like traditional brick and mortar M&A, which is great to see, because then we can leverage all the education that you get from the brick and mortar side and bring it over to the online side. Yet the online business world is a little bit easier. We have a lot fewer moving parts. The industry is maturing. I would encourage people, as this, the investment environment changes, just to keep really good track of what's going on, speak with brokers, speak with a local bank to even get pre-approved for an SBA loan. Because if something does pop up, you want to be pretty quick. Usually if you like the business, somebody else is going to like it too. So you really want maybe a pre-authorization or a pre-approval letter at that time. And so just keep your financial literacy of what's going on as accurate as you can, but it doesn't have to be so good that you could move that minute. It's just that you can catch up pretty quickly. But yeah, it has changed. It has changed quite a bit after about 8 years where it was all the same, because rates were all the same. You do have to pay a little bit more attention now.
That makes so much sense. And there's something I feel like that comes up a lot on this podcast here, Michael, and it's that, like, being prepared makes you money. Like, I would say somebody who's running short on cash flow because the interest rates have harmed their inventory business, like, now is going to be a difficult time to build that banker relationship. You're going to wish that you had done that 6 months ago, so that when you have a need, you can pick up the phone and Johnny will pick up his end of it and you can get a deal done. It's the same thing if I'm going to look to acquire. Like, if I have a little bit of capital, yep, I can come up with that 20%, like Michael's saying. The time to have my ducks in a row is right now, when interest rates are still high, when the multiples are still kind of weird and there may not be quite as many opportunities. Because if the market changes, to your point, there is going to be some sweet spot that Michael and I can't tell you when that is. If we could tell you when that is, we wouldn't be on the show. We'd be out mining those deals. But having getting your ducks in a row, you can be nimble. Oh, yeah. We'd be pulling resources from everyone we know. And I just think that that's so wise. Like, something like having your books and your data room in order, if you're going to need to go through personal diligence as part of the deal, or having your everything that makes sense. But by the way, this is the thing I feel like I've seen over the last couple of years, Michael, is the market was kind of irrational when the aggregator kind of concept became big in the Amazon and Shopify world, where there was a bit of a regression away from common sense for some of the investing that we saw. And so what's happened is the markets have tightened up is that now there's a kind of a regression back to the mean, back to the, wait a minute, I just need to have healthy, sustainable businesses that are profitable. I need to have enough working capital to operate. I need to have decent financials. I need to have, you know, some kind of a moat around my product that makes it interesting and meaningful to a future investor. I can't just slap an ASIN on a marketplace, get $1 million in sales and go get 5x multiple on that deal. It's like, I've got to run an adult business. Is that kind of what you see it also?
Exactly. The aggregator situation was very interesting to watch from a parallel niche. So in the software SaaS, I saw this all occurring. And the first thing it told me was, okay, I don't have anywhere near the money. Basically, they were getting money for free to even look at acquiring a business over there. And then the second thing I was worried was, is this going to come over to us? Are we going to get aggregators that are buying all the SaaS businesses? And then I can't operate in there because we just don't have the cash. But what we saw is they didn't have the operational skill. And that, you know, that was kind of the death knell for them. And so now it's nice to see, okay, those of us that actually do this every day that are either engineers inside of a company or working with e-commerce inside of a company, we can step out and do it ourselves. And we actually have the passion because we like the business to be the operators. So, you know, I think a lot of learn a lot from watching that crazy episode go on. I'm quite glad that it's over. And we all know history repeats itself. So this will happen again when rates get lower. They're going to start throwing, there's just a lot of dumb money out there. And I think it was definitely a challenge for me to acquire at that time because nothing was priced well. And kind of, yeah, a lot of dumb money with, you could talk, you can make that relationship with the seller and say, listen, I don't think the people you're talking to can operate the business. Like, I care about the business. I care about your customers. I think we're offering a little bit less, but if you love the baby that you created and have launched off into the world, we're going to take better care of it. And so that's some of the seller discussion things that I like to talk about, but it all relates back to what's that relationship with financing out there? How aggressive are people going to be? And yeah, it all kind of ties together. So it's important to kind of pay attention to all of it.
So you've used the phrases kind of professionalizing, you described yourself as an operator first, and then you just talked about this kind of operational skill set that I agree with you was lacking when you had a lot of kind of the Wall Street money dive in. It was really a feeding frenzy. So let's talk about that. Let's put the positive hat on here. Multiples are down a little bit as investors. We're going to find opportunities at some point in the next 2 years. What are the things that have been really crucial for you from that quest? Okay, if I buy it at one, I'm trying to grow it to 10. Like, can you unpack that for me a little bit? What does it look like to professionalize and scale a company like that?
Yes. So if you think about that life cycle I was talking about, what you're typically in my position and probably some of your audience, you're looking to acquire the business from the person that founded it. And so many times they don't even know it's going to be successful. So the way that they built the business is likely not scalable. And they are probably hitting some of those challenges, and that's what they're looking to sell for. Whether they tell you or not, you know, there's a lot of ways that businesses are built that they kind of can't scale after a certain piece. That's the first part that you start to professionalize, and you start to plan out, you know, how does this scale with more customers? How do we bring more product or more features in here? And I keep using the word professionalize, but that's more documentation, building a team that's more 24/7 instead of just waiting for the entrepreneur to be awake. And you're turning it more into a business than it was where it was just a entrepreneurial pursuit. So for me, I actually enjoy that phase. And I think you probably got a lot of listeners that are way better than me at operationalizing a business. I'm not sure I just made that word up, but it sounds good to me.
We'll take it.
And I think that's a sweet spot for a lot of people.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think, I don't know. It's funny. Each industry has a different like revenue threshold where the founder's ability to juggle the plates kind of becomes not a thing anymore. So when I was in the healthcare space prior to this business, that revenue point was about $1.5 million in revenue. Once we reached $1.5 million in revenue, my ability and my co-founder's ability as the founders really like it was like scale people, processes, and capital, or you're dead. It was what we went through. Yeah. And I think with e-commerce kind of product businesses that I've observed just as a CFO, it sometimes is a little higher than that. Sometimes they can make it to 2 million. Sometimes they can even make it to 3 million in revenue before the founder and a team of three VAs kind of run out of juice, they run out of gas to really do it. And yet that same like awkward adolescence of scale happens. And this is gonna be true, by the way, for a construction business, this might be like 600 grand in revenue. So every industry is gonna have a different threshold. And I think, Michael, what you just said there is so powerful, is like, we just have to kind of extricate ourselves from it. This is not, it can't be the cult of Tyler's personality anymore. Michael's personality is not gonna be enough. We're gonna have to build some processes. We're gonna have to probably bring in some people. And, you know, I've never worked directly in the dev space, but just comparing the dev space to these kind of Amazon and e-commerce sellers that my company serves, like, I'm assuming they wrestle with some of the same challenges, right?
Absolutely. And I can see some differences too. With software, it is possible to scale. If you have a service that doesn't quite require a lot of customer support, you can scale quite high because you just don't need to build the team out, and software doesn't cost you anything to replicate. So there are certain software businesses that I've seen where one or two people are running it and it's got massive revenue. I've also seen where you have $1 million, it's for sale, and it has 20 people, and I'm trying to figure out what the heck they all do. So it can be all over the place, you know, but there are some differences, I think, a little bit with software versus kind of something that would be dealing with physical products. But it is, it's the same pains that we have to go through to kind of build those processes in there. I have experienced exactly what you mentioned, where all of a sudden Michael's charm and ability to answer every customer email, it just can't cut it anymore because there's other things that just have to get done. And it's a little bit of a hard divorce for me because that's something I really enjoy doing. And I'm someone that still likes working in the business. And then you also have to work on it. So kind of it's two roles. But you do have to move out of the business a little bit. You do have to get people in there. And if they can do it 80% as good as you, you know, that's about what you can expect. So I suffer those same pains, even though I know I'm operationalizing the business. It's still hard to kind of pull yourself out, especially if you enjoy running the business like I do.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I don't think, I'm being honest with you for a second. I don't think I have like a superhero complex with the businesses I build, but I do have to confess that I naturally get attracted as an entrepreneur to chaos. And sometimes I can create my own chaos if there's not enough around me. And so like, anyway, I'm probably a little bit more of a founder than an operator. I'm so grateful for the business partners I have that are more integrator operator types, which is why we're still in business here 6 years in. But I think one of the big ahas for me, and you just reminded me of this when you kind of, I'm not sure if you're directly quoting Dan Martell's book, Buy Back Your Time or not, but this idea of entrepreneurs get in their own way, sometimes on purpose, sometimes on accident, and they love the widget and it's time to scale beyond that. And a turning point for me about a year ago was reading that book by Dan and realizing, oh man, I love putting out fires so much that if there's not one, I'll create one just to put it out. And then my team's looking at me saying, bro, what are you doing here? What the hell, man? And so I think slowing down, sobering, bringing in more operationally minded people like you, frankly, somebody who really loves the ops, can be a game changer. Question, somebody listening to this show who would benefit from just having you in their network, like anybody in particular that just, because it's funny, it's amazing, like somebody's listening to this and you're like, you're that guy. That guy's probably going to want to reach out to you. Who do you think would be the best connection to kind of that you might be able to serve?
You just cut out there. We're going to have to edit this part out. And I missed what the question was. Sorry.
No, okay. Listen, we cut out because of bad internet. Sorry about that, guys. And we can definitely clean that up. But the question I was asking is, somebody who's listening to this show who would get maximum benefit from meeting you or should consider reaching out to you, what does that person look like? What are they going through?
Typically, to me, it's anybody that's in the engineering, development, or IT professionals that are kind of in their middle of their career or later in their career that have had the experience in a corporate setting. I am definitely not one of those people that says, leave your W-2 job right away and go start a business. I think it's incredibly important to spend some time in corporate because remember, that's who you're selling back to in the future. That's your future customer. You need to understand how politics works inside of companies, who's pulling the strings. So I think it's really important to spend some time there. Maybe not 18 years like I did, but if you spent 10 to 15, and if you're at that point in your career and you're technically kind of a technical mindset or a technical background, that's a good fit for me because many of those people are looking to start their own business. And I keep saying, hey, why don't we just acquire one and we can start running from there. So that's a group that I think has resonated really well, and because we're talking the same language. And I feel that engineers and IT professionals, they have the hard part of owning a business pretty well set. They know how to run technology, tech teams, how to set up technical projects. We can teach the business part and we can teach the acquisition part. They already have the difficult part. So that's why I think this is kind of a little bit of a cheat code for engineers to kind of look into this space and look into buying different niches on online businesses. So that's a good group that I think meshes with me really well.
Love it. Love it. And I think that that's, first of all, I love that answer. That was really good. So michaelfrew.net. We're going to make sure that, Michael, your links are in the show notes here. I just think there's a shocking number of developers that also end up pivoting into selling products on Amazon or developing a product they can sell. You know, maybe they start on Kickstarter and then launch a Shopify site. And so I think if that's you guys and you love the data side of the business and you're now trying to hack the cheat code to go from where you are to the next level. Michael, I know you didn't come here to sell anything. I'm just saying I've really been impressed with you. I think this could be a great connection for you guys to connect with Michael. Michael, before I let you go, question I always ask guests on the show here is there a practice, habit, hack, rhythm in your life that you feel like gives you an unfair advantage or a strong ROI for your life?
For me, it's a pretty easy one. It's very, very low tech, very old, but it's reading books. Okay. I've got a massive library that drives my wife crazy every time we move that we have to move this library. But I attribute so much success and so much of my ability to cope through the challenges of life to books that I've read over the last few years. We've mentioned a few even on this show that I can remember how it helped me pivot a little bit where, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be working this hard in the business, or maybe I shouldn't be the firefighter. I need to be more of the operator. The internet has given us the opportunity to read so many things summarized, but something about having the depth of books has just made such a positive impact for me. So to me, that is kind of my secret hack. It seems to be getting less and less popular, which makes it more of a, make it sort of stronger hack for me. So that would be my recommendation.
You know, I got to ask you, last 6 months, what's been a high impact book that you'd recommend for us to check out if we're trying to level up as an operator, a leader, or business owner?
That's a really good question. I find that I go back to the Turning Pro book pretty often, and that's Stephen Pressfield, just to remind myself that, you know, remember who you are and what you're doing. When I first read it, it was a pretty pivotal moment that I had to sit down and say, okay, enough of this amateur stuff. You know, and I can point back to like, this is what I was doing back then. But if I'm going to move to that next level, you need to get a little bit more serious about it. And I guess maybe that's where the word professionalized keeps coming out when we're talking. And I have to go with it because when you plateau, as we all do, probably, you know, for me, it's about every 5 years. I bet for each person, it's a little different. So how am I going to get to that next level? What do I want that next level to be? And, you know, what are the disciplines and ideas that I need to take to get myself there? So that's a book I kind of always refer back to get a good baseline for that.
Love it. I have to admit, I also read a ton of books. I have not read that one. So it just went on the list. Thank you. Going Pro. I think you said it was by Pressley. Is that the author?
It's Stephen Pressfield.
Pressfield.
Hopefully I got that right. Yeah.
Well, like that. We'll make sure.
Yeah. Some things that you read and you're like, gosh, I can't even remember the author. I just read it all the time.
Love it. Michael, this has been a great conversation. Thank you for joining us today. Again, we'll make sure there's links to your content and to your website. Just want to say thank you for joining the show. Thanks for being here today.
Been fantastic. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And guys, listen, I say this every week. I want to say it again. For anybody who's, you know, given Michael and I 27, 28 minutes of your life to listen to this, you know, incoherent rant coming from me here in Redneck, Georgia. And then Michael is a professional operator there. I think you're in Vegas, right? Is that right, Michael?
I'm in Vegas. Yeah, good spot here.
Great Vegas vibe. So we just want to say we're grateful. There's genuine gratitude that you would give us your attention. We hope you grab something that would move your life forward. Maybe it's reading that book that Michael recommended. But until we see you next week, hope you kill it. Thanks for joining Return.